Welcome back, everybody. This is Oscar Talk with yours truly, Chris Tapley of InContention.com and Ann Thompson of Thompson on Hollywood.
Congratulations on your new partnership, Chris.
Thank you very much. It's funny, when I said InContention.com, it occurred to me that that's probably the last time it will be read as that. From now on, it will just be InContention. We are moving over to HitFix. This is the last podcast that will be on the InContention.com proper. So, very excited, very stoked, feel like I'm in great hands, and we got a lot of great positive feedback on it, too, so I'm really glad for that. So
yeah, you did, including for me, because
I think
it's a great, I think it's a great fit. I think you two are, you know, the ideal partnership where each of you is going to feed and support and enhance the other. So congratulations again.
It's going to be fun. And one of the first things everyone got worried about was, is Oscar Talk going to go away? No. Oscar Talk stays. Oscar Talk is forever.
For everyone, we will keep talking about this.
Oscar Talk stays.
It already feels like the season is, you know, well underway. I have heard.
It is.
Sasha said something today that, like, annoyed the hell out of me.
I mean, no.
You got into a little Twitter thing today. But basically, she said she was just making an offhanded comment that it was a little late in the day for somebody to enter the supporting actress race or something. I'm still starting to sort of just fill out my Oscar chart. I mean, what?
Well, I think what she meant.
September.
Yeah, I think what she meant was, she was putting together her thing for her Best Actress column, and she was just wondering if anything out of Toronto that hasn't been picked up has, like, a Best Actress play. And the truth is, it doesn't seem like anything there is wetting anyone's whistle, really, and getting them ready to put it out there, except for The Lady, which just sold, and it went to Cohen Media Group. So
yeah, The Lady's not, I mean, despite some of the huffing and puffing on the part of folks at Deadline, who, I mean, I have to say something. I'm going to say it right out, right now, and I'm going to call it the way I see it. I have to stay objective. I have to stay, you know, a lot. I'm very aware here in Toronto that a lot of people are positioning, you know, their horses in the race, and they want Oscar bloggers, and they want the headlines.
Right.
They want the, oh, this person's going to be a contender in the Oscar race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now it's very easy to write that. It's very easy to say that. But is there even a remote possibility that that's going to necessarily be true of Michelle Yeoh, for example, in The Lady, which, by the way, I liked the movie very much. And I think Luc Besson did a terrific job. I actually think that David Thewlis gives an amazing performance. Mm-hmm. But Michelle Yeoh and The Lady and the Cohen Media Group, maybe they can get the movie out there, but I just don't see it.
Well, I will say that in my write-up on that acquisition, one of the things I noted was the only real it's a younger company, but they produced Frozen River, which was distributed by Sony Classics. But this is a young company. I don't know what kind of money's involved. Last year, Newmarket picked up The Way Back and had nothing to throw at it money-wise. So it is something where you should be like, look, it looks like an Oscar bait role, but the reality is, do they have the infrastructure to get it there?
That's correct.
And that's what I think you're saying, and I totally agree with that.
And, you know, there's another movie, you know, like the Zhang Yimou footage that we saw here for what has been retitled The Flowers of War, you know. It is so, it used to be called Heroes of Nanking.
Okay.
It looks like a great performance by, you know, Christian Bale. They'd love to get that out by the end of the year. It isn't finished. Even if it makes it into Asia by December the 16th, even if China decides to qualify it for the Oscar, which is a possibility, but we don't know whether that will happen or not. Even, you know, if they get 1 week at the end of December, who's going to, you know, they're going to wait. The distributors are clearly waiting to see the completed film, which is very mm-hmm. intense. It's set during the Rape of Nanking. You know, it looks gorgeous. It looks fantastic. But you know, they're going to wait. And so it's one thing for Fox Searchlight to decide they're going to go for shame. They're going to go for an Oscar race for shame. They've done it before. They know what's required. They have time between Toronto. A finished film is in hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one thing.
Well, the other thing is, I feel like it really affects the performance potential of the film, because if a film, a lot of these guys have these movies in Toronto, and they say, yeah, we want you to pick it up, but the deal is we want it out this year for Oscars. And there's a lot to be mobilized around something like that. And I look at a movie like, for instance, Rampart, which we both love. And
absolutely.
I feel like, and it's my understanding that that movie is, it's one of those that they want out before the end of the year.
But the distributors are not, you know, what happens is there's a waiting game where they wait and see how low they can get the price on a movie like that.
That
is so risky,
but
you know?
A movie like that, to me, would have been better positioned if they had held it for Sundance and then let it grow throughout the year, perhaps. And maybe Woody Harrelson's performance would have grown in buzz or whatnot.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
Rampart is a very Sundance movie. In fact, there are a lot of movies here in Toronto. You can get lost.
Yeah.
You can get lost,
you can get
in
crushed.
Toronto. You know, I'm going to write something up about that. I have an interview with Oren Moverman, which was one of the best, if I may say so myself, you know, one of the better interviews I did here. Sometimes they're cramming you into these places for 15 minutes. I am seriously thinking about next year not doing interviews here. And even though it's an opportunity to get in front of certain people and get out your flip cam or whatever, and they don't, you know, everybody comes to LA. It's a long season. I can wait.
Exactly.
I think it's better to actually write your review of the movie, to take the time to give people your reaction to the movie. Because I'm actually delayed slightly on putting some of this stuff up because I actually want to do a good job, you know, editing it, getting the, you know, the interview I did with Moverman was on the phone. It's got to be edited down, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I think, you know, that's as I've said for a while, this has become more and more my issue with Toronto is it's less a festival than a string of junkets. And it's this.
Always was. 'Twas ever thus.
Right. But is it not clearly becoming a little crazier with the glut of Oscar wannabes?
Well, I was aware this year that I, at least more than ever, I was in that position of being, you know, asked in a way to serve that master. I mean, Rachel Weisz sat down with me for The Deep Blue Sea, presumably because there's hopes there for that one too.
Mm-hmm.
And she gives an Oscar-worthy performance. She does. It's extraordinary. It's a really, really good movie, but it is so small and period and precisely intimate and very much of a stage play on film that I can't really imagine that it's going to, you know, who's going to pick it up and who's going to push it that far and who's going to take it all the way in time. I don't see it.
Well, the fact is, when you got stuff that's still looking this late in the game, you know, there are acquisition screenings in LA all the time. There's typically a reason why things are still looking when they get to Toronto. So, and it's not, it says nothing of quality. It says everything of what people think they can sell. But let's talk about Rampart, though, since we just kind of touched on it. I totally love that movie.
Like, me too.
I mean,
this guy's the real deal. Owen Moverman is the real deal, and he went back to the same people he worked with before on The Messenger, which was also super good. And he went back to Woody Harrelson and gives him the part of a lifetime. Is this cop, this crazy, you know, on a rampage kind of cop?
Yeah, just kind of a nihilistic sort, you know, and. It's funny. Ben Foster, I didn't even recognize until he got a bit of a close up in the middle of the movie, and I said, "Oh, there's Ben Foster. He's great too."
Small.
It's small,
really,
but he's
small.
Great. I mean, the
women are good too. The Anne Heche and it's so weird.
You know I thought was great? Robin Wright. Totally.
She was.
Totally. Just it's a movie of so much nuance and just little things here and there that builds into something that's more. I don't know. I was really impressed. I loved The Messenger as it was, but this is a real directorial achievement to me.
I couldn't agree more.
Below the Line is great.
Let's not leave out James Ellroy. He basically, Moverman rewrote, who is a good writer, Moverman, he rewrote Ellroy's script, and the two of them together, he stayed true to that Ellroy sensibility.
Oh, yeah. You can hear Ellroy's voice inside that thing.
Absolutely.
So what do you think, what are you hearing as far as acquisitions? I hear maybe IFC Films could be involved. What do you think?
That would be a good home, but Oscilloscope would be a good home too. I mean, speaking of the small distributors, Oscilloscope with Cynthia Schwartz, who's obviously, you know, got her own shingle now. What's it called? Strategize.
Strategy PR, I think.
Thank you. That's the perfect thing, because that's what she does really well. Yeah. And she does Oscar strategy better than anyone, too. And mm-hmm. and if she's behind this with Oscilloscope, I could see them having a shot at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Given their current bent, you know.
They just picked up Wuthering Heights. Did you happen to see that in Toronto?
I didn't see Wuthering Heights. The word on it, though, was that, you know, it makes Jane Eyre look like a mainstream Hollywood movie. So mm-hmm. I shouldn't say anything, because I love Andrea Arnold and mm-hmm. I want very much to see the film.
Everything I hear about it, even the negative, it makes me want to see it more, honestly. So
yeah.
And that's the way I felt about Rampart going into it. I kept reading these kind of mixed to negative notices, and everything they wrote about it made me think that I was going to like it. And then there I did. Let's talk about the two movies that were already on the circuit going into the festival that were looking for another bump. That's The Artist and The Descendants. How did they seem to play?
Well, it's clear as a bell that those two films came roaring out of Telluride, you know, with a great deal. What's great about Telluride is that you do have a real audience there. Mm-hmm. And they just, you can see that The Artist is going to be a hit and The Descendants is going to be a hit. But you can also see that they're the kind of films that are going to play for the Academy. And the same thing happened in Toronto on a bigger scale. So those are the two front runners. There's no question about it right now.
But what's funny to me, and what's interesting and frankly appreciated, is there is no lead dog, King Speech, Slumdog kind of thing coming out of the Telluride, Venice, Toronto corridor kind of thing. It's really exciting that those that skipped the festivals or those that weren't even going to be festival movies, on the other side, there's still life in a way. It's like there's still a lot of discovery to happen this year, and that's good.
The other movie that played really well in Toronto, there are two other films that played well here. One was 50-50,
mm-hmm.
and I do think that Joseph Gordon-Levitt, he may be a long shot, but I think he's got a real shot.
Me too.
For Best Actor. And that played really well. And then the other, I mean, I'm curious to see where the critics end up at, you know, before it opens, you know, what that final number is. I know that people get mad at me for taking Rotten Tomatoes so seriously, but, you know, you really do need to get above 75. You need to get up into the 80s, really, to be really an Oscar contender, I believe. There may be
exceptions.
The Blind Side, whatever. But you know,
I think The
Reader
and Crash were in the 60s.
There are. Cynthia Schwartz would come back to me and, you know, and say, Anne, you know, you don't have to have reviews to win Oscars. And there are exceptions. But movies like 50-50 kind of need them.
Yeah, yeah. What's the other movie you said there was?
Oh, sorry. The other one that did actually really well here was Moneyball.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I saw that here.
I loved Moneyball, and Bennett Miller did an amazingly good job. It is not Hollywood, you know, fast-paced, slick, you know. It doesn't feel like a studio movie. It feels mm-hmm. like an independent movie. And it's got this great performance, very easygoing, very relaxed on the part of Brad Pitt. And Jonah Hill is so great in this. I was just asking myself if Jonah Hill could get nominated, and I actually don't think so. What do you think?
Before the movie started showing to everyone, I had heard that he was something to watch for. But after seeing the movie, funnily enough, I'm not as high on him as everyone else really is. I mean, I think he's great. He's serviceable. He does something that he hasn't done before. But I think that's what people are responding to. They're used to him being the guy from Superbad. But he's good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the performance. I think it might be a little overstated, is all.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think he does what he needs to do, and he's surprising. And Bennett Miller just leaves the camera on him for these, mm-hmm. You know, incredibly long reaction shots, mm-hmm. these silent burns. But, you know, I don't know whether actors will go for it.
That's
why I'm asking the question. But I could see Moneyball. Maybe if the reviews are as good as I think they're going to be, and if it's as big a hit as I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be a big populist hit. I could see that sort of becoming the Blind Side of the season more than anything else. And I could also see Bennett Miller in there, and I could see Pitt pushing his own performance in The Tree of Life into contention mm-hmm. via this movie. What do you think?
Well, it's funny. I really liked the movie. I wrote about it. I'm glad you mentioned Bennett Miller as much as you did, because he does direct the hell out of this thing. It's really interesting what the way the film is put together, what he does with these silent moments here and there. The moment I don't. This isn't really giving anything away, but do you remember that cut where it's Brad Pitt throwing a chair into the hallway?
Yeah.
The way they edited that, just little things like that throughout the movie, just say to me that I want Bennett Miller to do more movies because
he's hot again.
Yes.
Yeah. He had this long hiatus after Capote. He's a demanding guy. He's one of those. He's like a PTA. He's somebody who doesn't mess around.
I like the movie so much because it's so dense. It's about so many different things. The last thing it is to me is a sports movie too. I think a lot of big pat on the back to two of the best writers in the game, Steve Zaillian and Aaron Sorkin.
Well, that gives it a pedigree that elevates it in the Academy universe.
It's funny to me though. I walked away from it thinking that it wasn't going to be an Academy movie.
So did I. It's growing on me.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about what I was just going over the list. I was just really going over the list and realizing that some things are you know, like The Ides of March did not, which I did not see because it screened on the very first day and I was sent a ticket for a screening that didn't exist. Never mind. But anyway, I ended up missing it, but just looking at the way it was received, it just doesn't seem to have that kind of push behind it. It's the Descendants that's happening.
Yeah, that's the vibe I'm getting from way over here. But on Moneyball, you mentioned Brad Pitt. He's great. He's obviously the
lead. I still
lead.
Don't think it's an Oscar performance, though.
It's probably not. You know, I mean, it's interesting though. That category seems to be very. I mean, obviously there are things we need to see still, but it seems to be very much in flux here and there at the bottom of that category. But regarding Tree of Life, that's going to be a supporting actor push from Searchlight. It's not going to be a lead actor push.
What, Brad Pitt?
Yeah. And that's smart on their part because he's in Moneyball. He's obviously the star and lead actor of Moneyball. And I think that it's a supporting performance in the Tree of Life. So I'm glad they're doing that. But
I'm actually really surprised by that.
Yeah? Well,
I think that's crazy.
Why?
We got to argue about something today.
Well, I don't think the movie is about Brad Pitt, first of all. I think the movie is Hunter McCracken's movie. That's the lead actor of The Tree of Life. He won't be doing anything. He'll be in school and whatnot.
Well, that's absurd. This is like you last year with The True Grit. I mean, Hailee Steinfeld should be the lead of True, just because she tells the story. She's an unknown actress. It's the first time she's ever been in a big movie. She's a supporting actress.
I don't care about that. I don't care whether she's been in one movie or no movies.
McCracken, you want him to you want them to put him up for best actor?
I'm telling you what I think about the narrative of the film, and the lead of The Tree of Life is Hunter McCracken's character.
You are, like, this is where your screenwriting, you know, bias really...
No, this is where I'm not sounding like an Oscar strategist. I'm sounding like somebody who saw a movie, period.
Mm-hmm.
And
all
this
right.
is what I'm taking away from it. I mean, The Tree of Life is not about Brad Pitt. It's about Hunter McCracken, and Hunter McCracken gives a better performance than Brad Pitt in The Tree of Life, and I think that Brad Pitt gives his best work to date in The Tree of Life. That's what I think of Hunter McCracken.
That's why I think the actor branch is going to give Brad Pitt a nomination, and they should own it that he's a big, huge movie star, and give him. And he is the most powerful, overwhelming figure in the whole movie. It is totally a lead performance.
No.
Chastain.
No. You don't learn anything about Brad Pitt. First of all, he is something for McCracken's character to bounce off of throughout that movie. You don't know anything about Brad Pitt. It's all done in vague strokes. Very well done.
There's a whole lot about how he gave up his dreams, about how he.
But it's so underneath the surface. That's not what the movie's about.
That incredible moment where he breaks down, where he touches his son. He is as good as you. I agree with you that he is as good. I'm going to stick to my guns, and I think that it's going to be very interesting.
It's like saying the dog from The Sandlot is the lead actor.
Oh, please.
Yeah, I'm telling
Let's
you.
Let's move on.
All right, so what else in Toronto? Anonymous. I think we both liked that because I saw a tweet from you today.
I think, yes. Now, that said, all right, let's talk about all right, so Roland Emmerich, very surprising movie coming from him. He is a very talented director who can go either way. I mean, his career, if you just look at, you know, 10 million years BC or whatever that thing was called, you know, all the different, you know, Independence Day, you know, I'm
Day
a big
After Tomorrow,
fan
2012.
Of some of those big I'm actually a huge fan of some of those
Me
big
too.
movies. I think he's very good at them, and he does them impeccably. But so he has chops. It's just that he sort of lacks a certain taste or refinement or something. Sometimes he just goes off the deep end. So here is a movie that's beautifully made, incredible period, incredible costumes, great performances. Rhys Ifans is extraordinarily good, and so is Vanessa Redgrave. I mean, you just don't expect him to be doing a back, you know, like a backstory biopic on who was William Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
The script is the superstar here, except
I agree.
That there's one horrible like mistake that they make at the end, which
What's that?
Almost destroys. I can't say. It's a twist.
Oh,
it's
have...
a reveal that just I just went, oh no, don't do that.
Is it when the melodrama kicks in toward the end?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Super we'll melodrama.
We'll
super
talk off mistake. The air. I actually loved that
super,
bit.
Oh no.
I actually loved that bit. Nah.
Cheesy.
Nah.
Cheezee is how bad that was. Anyway.
Well, I really liked the movie, as I said last week.
It's great fun.
Rhys Ifans is great. He's so unrecognizable, really. It's
well, he's so authoritative. I mean, he just owns it.
He totally does.
He's playing this earl, and he's there. The conceit of the movie is that this lord, you know, actually. You know, is the real Shakespeare, but he had to do it in secret. So
Earl, actually.
Earl.
That's one thing that the movie's going to be a problem for some. I think that it gets kind of confusing with its various nobilities and whatnot, and people at the beginning of the movie might feel a little lost with that, but because it's a movie that starts to flashback, and I didn't even realize there were flashbacks for the first half hour. And then I said,
no, I was okay with
that. And
I
said, oh, I see what's going on now. But in any case, I'm glad you liked it because I thought people were just going to crap all over this thing. So,
that said, I'm not sure it's an Oscar contender.
Me neither. It's like a fringe contender.
Shakespeare in Love, obviously, is the comparable movie, but
which is interesting because he wrote this script like 15 years ago, and as soon as Shakespeare in Love hit, this thing was like not going to be made for a while.
Right.
So.
No, so they're bringing it back now. That makes perfect sense. It's everybody's. The other thing, though, is that they, I don't know how to say this exactly, but they kind of cheaped out on a lot of the other supporting roles. Some of the, you know, the guy who plays Ben Jonson or the guy who plays Will Shakespeare, we don't know who they are.
I think they were all great.
They were okay.
I thought the guy that played Ben Jonson, I named these two guys by name in my review. I thought they were both great. I thought the comedic kind of play on who Shakespeare was as this buffoon who couldn't even write his way out of a paper bag, I just thought it worked and it was good, and they did a great job of it.
I got a kick out of people like Mark Rylance performing Shakespeare.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Thank God they did that. And Derek Jacobi, who does a good job at the beginning. Yeah, these are the great Shakespearean actors, and I just got a kick out of some of that.
And they are Oxfordians. They believe in the theory put forth in the film. And in fact, Derek Jacobi was that framing device was added later because he really wanted to be in the movie. So there we are.
So explain what Oxfordians are.
Oxfordians are those that believe that the Earl of Oxford was the true author of Shakespeare's works, which is the Earl of Oxford is who Rhys Ifans plays in the
film.
Right,
Yeah, Edward de Vere.
Indeed. So, it's a good movie, and I think it's going to play. I think it's long, though. It's 2.5 hours. It's probably too long.
Didn't feel long.
I didn't think it felt long either, though. Yeah.
The movie that felt long to me was, just to go back, is The Lady. That needs a trim.
Yeah.
That needs a serious trim. I think it could be a lot better. Very repetitive and elongated. And I have a feeling they rushed that into Toronto. So Luc Besson might want to go back into the editing room on that one.
Did you get around to A Separation?
I did not. I will catch up with that later.
How did Take Shelter play there? Because I kept waiting to hear people kind of talking about it out of the screenings there.
I think that what happened with Take Shelter, I mean, one of the interesting things that happens is if you have a movie that already played Sundance, already played Cannes, you know, it doesn't have news value in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But it played well here. But it's like you don't have that buzz that goes with
its
first reviews. So I think they probably banked a bunch of interviews. And Michael Shannon, I think Michael Shannon should get some heat as a Best Actor candidate. But that movie.
Have we talked about this movie yet?
No,
Well, we
no.
should, because I love this movie. I saw it, I guess, a month or so ago, and Michael Shannon's performance, even after the stuff I've seen out of the festival circuit, it's still, I think, the best performance of the year. I mean, he
And
kills it.
also, the Jeff Nichols is the director, and the movie has this writer director. It has this. It just hits the zeitgeist in a way. I mean, with all the crazy weather and all the sense of the world sort of spinning out of control, it just grabs it by the balls. It really does. And you just you're it freaks you out a little bit. It unnerves you, this movie. It's very controlled and very well done.
Yeah, and Jeff
And
Nichols
Jessica
is,
Chastain is also very good.
she's one of her 30 or 40 performances this year. Yeah, Jeff Nichols, I should give a shout out, a fellow North Carolina School of the Arts alumni. He was going to school there when I was there. And this is his second movie with Michael Shannon. The last one was Shotgun Stories, which I still haven't seen.
Me
But
neither.
I need to see it.
Other people, well, Chastain, for example, raves about having seen that and gives that as the reason for why she was willing to go with a relative unknown in this situation. So,
Yeah, I
must
always heard that it was a great movie, so I
yeah.
need to check it out. Well, what about some stuff like Barrymore? Did you see this?
I did.
Christopher Plummer?
That's another example of you know, people kind of flogging something with Oscar hopes because they think of Christopher Plummer as someone who's in that league, and of course he is, and he gives a great performance, but it was a theater piece. It was a theater piece, and it should have stayed a theater piece. There's absolutely no reason for this movie to exist, in my humble
Why, it's
opinion.
not cinematic?
No, it's a one-man show that
Kind
they're
of sounds
filming
like Dangerous
as if it
Method to
was a,
me.
you know, no. It's really, you know, he loves Barrymore. I mean, he did a great Q&A after the movie, and he loves Barrymore, and he did this show, and he, you know, it's a very theatrical thing, and they didn't really manage to turn it into something cinematic that has any reason for being.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's obviously going to be hard to sell a one-man show to consumers, and then the
I don't
Academy,
think this
it's
is going
just,
anywhere.
yeah. How about Twixt? Did you see that?
I didn't because I saw the footage in Comic-Con and I interviewed Coppola there, and I just had heard such bad word on it that I skipped it. I
But
skipped
what's funny,
WE too, by the way,
well, that's probably
just because
good.
you know, because I just kept going in the direction. This is what you do at festivals sometimes. You just head in the direction of where the good word is.
Well, what's funny about Twixt is the buzz kind of picked up toward the end, and people that I would not expect to be over the moon about it, like Mark Olson, are like, "It's one of the most heartfelt films I saw here." I'm like, "Wow!" So,
Well, I'll catch up with it. I'll catch up with it, but you know, not the mainstream of the critics though. You know, I heard in fact I was walking out of the Scotiabank theater today and these guys were all debating what was the worst movie they saw and it was between Trespass and Twixt.
Oof.
And the other one that got really, really bad word of mouth here was something called Hick, which people just excoriated.
I didn't
So
see anything good on 360 either.
that didn't go over that well. So I took that one off my. I didn't see that one either. I took that one off my. That's the thing. If you're trying to write and you're trying to see films and you're trying to do interviews
You have to
and
make choices, no doubt.
you know, you just can't do everything.
What
I had to
about
do panels and things. I'm trying to justify why I missed all these important movies.
What about Killer Joe? Did you see Killer Joe yet?
No, I didn't go to that one either.
Take This Waltz.
Nope, I'm going to see
Okay.
that later.
Well, we'll
That
talk
was
about them later. I'm sure we'll both
no.
get around
Take
to them.
This Waltz is definitely one of the ones that played really well here. I did see Whit Stillman's Damsels in Distress, which was delightful. Not anything that's going to register on the Oscar radar, but just a delightful little minor key kind of movie. I think I should get going, but do
I
you have
was
a
going to
reader
say,
question?
yeah, instead of hitting these other notes I had made, I was going to say we should just dive into a couple of questions real quick and then call it a day. Does that work? Okay. All right. I haven't had a chance to peruse, but let's see. What do you think about Tom Hardy and a chance at a Warrior nomination? That's from Daniel. The movie really didn't do well at the box office this weekend. What do you think's going to happen there?
I'd like to think that Warrior has a shot. I mean, they're trying to build word of mouth on that because It's such a good movie. I love that movie. No, the answer is no. The remote possibility exists that Nick Nolte could get a supporting nomination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you still think that'll survive? I mean, that's kind of how I feel too.
It could. They have to push for it. They have to go for it. Mm-hmm. They have to do everything right. I mean, the same is true of Summit and 50-50, you know. Mm-hmm. If they don't do everything right, it won't happen. It's the same is true of a lot of things.
This one's from Joseph. I saw The Artist at Toronto and thought, why isn't there any buzz for Bernice Bejo in supporting actress? Do you think the popularity of the film could sweep her into a nomination as well? I don't feel that way, but
no,
what do you think?
I don't either.
I don't think there's much. I mean, I appreciate that people like the performance, but that's not the story of the movie. I mean, the movie is Jean Dujardin, and, you know, she doesn't, I don't know, she doesn't leap off the screen to me as something that people would want to award. So
I agree with you. I agree with you. It's just an instinct on my part, a gut instinct on my part, that she's not a recognizable actress, that she doesn't suddenly arrive in some way, like we're going to want more of her, like a Marion Cotillard or something. And I just don't think it's going to happen. But he's in there. Dujardin is in there. Now, there's a problem with Dujardin, though, which is that he doesn't speak very good English. His director does.
They can turn that into something endearing, though. I don't think that's a problem.
I just watched him laboring through these interviews and dinners with, a translator. And, you know, Marion Cotillard went to school and learned English and worked it and worked the room. And I think that it would behoove Monsieur Desjardins, as difficult as it is, I know. I should talk. My French is terrible, but if he really wants it, it would help him.
This is from Ryan. I asked people to repost the question from last week if we didn't get around to it, because we didn't get to any last week. But he wanted to know, why do you think the New York Festival was not able to secure a huge debut like they did last year with The Social Network? What do you think about that? What?
They tried to get Tinker Tailor for opening night.
Right.
It was a big negotiation, and Gary Oldman wasn't available. He was shooting The Dark Knight, and they couldn't get him or Tom Hardy, and they nixed it. And it was opening so early in England that they didn't want it later in the festival, and that's why it's not here in Toronto. So, you know, that's what happened. It went to Venice, and that's just what happened. They nailed down Carnage as soon as they needed something for opening night with big actors, and they did not go for The Descendants, which I found odd. They waited and booked that for closing night. If it had been me, I would have gone for the. I would have. It may have been a question of where The Descendants had already been accepted at another festival, so they couldn't get it to be exclusively opening night for them. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
I imagine they also thought they were going to have J. Edgar, because Eastwood always goes there, but that wasn't ready, and they're holding that for AFI Fest now. So
that's correct. And by the way, that thing you said about a number of movies being held and waiting in the wings, there's always a few of those, and sometimes they're the big studio films.
Yeah.
And so J. Edgar and Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close and War Horse are going to come roaring down the pike, I'm sure, later on.
Yeah, is there anything you have in mind with that? Because a reader named Brace says, is there a film that could surprise as an entry in this year's award season that no one sees as a contender, but it might become one? Does anything spring to mind?
Those are the big ones. If there were a surprise, I mean, I'm wondering what's going to happen with Shame. What if Jane Eyre came back? What if Focus suddenly brought Jane Eyre back?
Yeah, you've been high on that one.
It's Fassbender. Yeah. Maybe Shame is a little too strange. Maybe Dangerous Method is a little too strange. Maybe Focus can push Jane Eyre as the one.
I don't think Shame is going to do much awards-wise. I think they're going to put it in the awards conversation and get it some money for that.
That's right.
And then
correct.
Be in business with Steve McQueen, as I said last week.
Yes.
But, yeah. And last question.
All right.
Last question, because this one's funny. They Call Me Mr. Tits wants to say, which movie do you feel better captures that feeling of change in the 1960s? The Help or Richard Lester's Help?
I will vote for Richard Lester any day of the week, but I think I would. I think I'd rather espouse the greatest one of all, which is Hard Day's Night.
Indeed. Well, now you have me trying to decide which film to go out with today, so I'll decide on something, whatever it is that's playing right now. But I'll talk to you next week, and we will be at HitFix then, in contention, Will.
And I will still be at IndieWire.
You will still be at IndieWire.
All right, bye, guys.
Good talking to you.
Bye.
Bye.